Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we have the wonderful privilege of having a man who is not only dedicated to mind power, but heart power and spirit power. The mind-body-spirit aspect has been very much supported by Dr. Bernie Siegel for many, many years. A man who has been involved as a surgeon and in so many different aspects of medicine, though he retired in 1989, he didn't really. And he has continued to bring forth the wisdoms that he's learned from his patients and from his own life experience. And it's my delight that we're able to bring him to the airwaves today. Dr. Bernie Siegel, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, you're a man who has sort of gone full circle. You started off in an area of what I'd call analytical thinking. You then went through a number of your own personal experiences, experiences with patients, and you opened up to a different modality of understanding and perceptiveness that you are dedicating your life to enabling other physicians to open up to. But it's not just physicians. You want people in everyday life to understand that there's something greater than they are in this experience we call life. Bernie, you've been doing this for so long. What is it that just continues to, create an enthusiasm for keeping the words out there, the essence, the feeling? Because your book, The Art of Healing, really emphasizes this to a very high degree. What is it that makes you tick relative to this?
Well, I think there are a lot of things. I always say my life should be a movie because it's been an incredible experience. So, and Jung's statement was the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance and therefore can be guessed by clairvoyance. So I think that much of what has happened to me, you know, occurred for unconscious reasons, just decisions I made and how one thing leads to another. Many years ago, just to give you some examples, I attended a workshop by Carl Simonton, a weekend workshop. It was to help empower cancer patients, and I wanted to learn other techniques and tools because it was so painful being a surgeon. You couldn't cure everything, fix everything, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
When I came back to the office on Monday, one of my partners said to me, "You're gone." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You're a different person. You're going to leave surgery." And I thought he was nuts. But a few years later, I did leave surgery and continue on in doing all the support work and that type of thing. But to me, it's two things. One is our potential. I mean, there are a lot of things about the human body we have yet to learn. And I keep saying I'd rather spend money literally studying the human body than outer space, because I think we're just as fascinating inside as it is out there.
Oh, I agree.
You know, but I think we're more afraid to go within than we are to go out into distant places. But anyway, and the other is, as I say, that there is survival behavior. There's self-induced healing. There's the mysteries of life. And, you know, being a part of this with people who are willing to participate in this and see what they can accomplish, you know, and not go home and die because a doctor, you know, predicts something, but to enjoy living. And when you help people, well, at that conference, a patient of mine was sitting next to me, and she said, "I need to know how to live between office visits." That's what really
altered.
Oh,
what a powerful statement.
Yeah, that altered my whole life because I went home and back to the office, and offered people support groups to teach them how to live and telling them if they did, they'd live a longer, better life. I was amazed at how few people showed up. I mean, less than a dozen women came after I sent out 100 letters telling them about the group and what good it could do for them. And so again,
isn't it interesting that you had, though it was a small group, it was the women that showed up. You didn't have any men show up.
No. The women are willing to talk about feelings. Some are still worried, you know, I'll do it wrong. If you want me to draw a picture, read a book, you know, do imagery, change my life. What if I don't get well? I'm a failure. So it has a lot to do with how you were brought up. And I mean that literally, what your parents said to you, because the parental words are hypnotic and can destroy a person's life. And I really think all these headlines we read of mass murders are related to how they feel about themselves and how they were brought up. You know, if you don't feel worthy and you want to get revenge because of what people said to you, you know, why don't they just go and commit suicide? You know, I know children who have said to me, I don't want to be like my parents. I'd rather kill myself than them. So, again, all these things become a part of your life. Men are into, what can I do? You know, if I can't work, what's the point of living? And women are very much into relationships, so they're more likely to survive. But I'm also pointing out to the women, you don't die when the kids leave home. I mean, you know, take care of yourself, too. And for the men to wake them up to the fact that they have a wife and children, you know, and relationships, and it isn't just about their job. And all these things relate very much to survival. But I call it, as a matter of fact, one of the sentences in the book is, and why I wrote it, was how to make the invisible visible. There are 70 drawings in the book, as well as many, many chapters about me talking through the written word. And the invisible is, again, about our consciousness. What comes up in a dream? What comes up in a drawing? And there's incredible wisdom, both about the body as well as psychological factors. I mean, doctors are never told that probably 90 or more years ago, Carl Jung interpreted a dream and correctly diagnosed a brain tumor. Now, I think they should be told that in medical school. So when a patient comes in, they say, do you have any sense of what's going on? Have you had any dreams lately? You know, what's happening in your life? I mean, to really treat the patient and their experience, not just, okay, here's your diagnosis, take this pill or you've got to go have an operation. Or it's know the person. And I found, I thought I was discovering incredible things because I had drawn a picture for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She knew a great deal about my life because of this outdoor scene I drew. Numbers, for instance. In other words, we literally store our lives in our body. I mean, a reporter came to interview me. I could tell she was very intellectual and did not think much of me and what I was doing. So I said to her, before we talk, would you draw me a picture? And I'll finish up with the patients, and then we'll sit down and talk. She handed me her picture. Her head was quite large, which, you know, confirmed my opinion. But in the picture was a clock with one hand on it pointed at 12. And
my
I really wanted
goodness.
To shake her up, so I just said, what happened to you when you were 12 years old? I don't like deadlines. I said, there's only one hand on the clock. And she, you know, burst into tears and revealed what had happened. And that changes her, you see. She realizes, wow, that is stored in me and is having an effect on me. And I see this over and over again. And it helps people then really begin to heal. Also, what the disease means to them. Another was a woman, I said, how would you describe what you're going through? She had cancer. She said, failure. I said, how does that fit your life, that word? She said, well, my body failed. I said, that's not my question. How does the word failure fit your life? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. That must have been a failure as a child. That simple statement helped change her life. And she was willing to do that. I don't mean that I changed her, but, you know, when that hit her, she really woke up because she had been afraid of relationships her whole life because of what her parents did. So she, you know, never got close to anybody again.
Your stories are so poignant, and one of the tools, or I should say set of tools, that you want people with your book, The Art of Healing, to begin to utilize is a box of crayons, a water gun, a noisemaker, and a magic marker. Now, right. I loved this, and I am so with you when you talk about the use of drawings, because I can relate a very personal experience where when I was a young mother, I was in a very, very bad marital situation, and I had a small child. And my daughter, I asked her to draw a picture for me. And what I saw, I knew, and this was long before I got into my mind work, I realized this is bad. This is something, this is very, very dark. This isn't healthy. And then, and I did this. Nobody had ever taught me to do it. And then after I had gotten the divorce and I had moved into an entirely different environment, shifted everything, I asked her to do a drawing for me. And it was full of sunshine. It was full of bright colors. It was wonderful. Mm. And then I can recall when she was in her early teens, and sadly, it was because she, without my knowing it, had gotten involved in the use of drugs. I saw a drawing then that showed me that she was in a space of mind that was not a good place. So the art that you describe, the drawing, parents, teachers, doctors, you can use this. And a person doesn't have to be an artist to do this.
No,
so
not at all.
The box,
as a matter of fact, the problem,
and a piece of paper.
Let me add, the problem is that people will say things like, I'm not an artist. One woman had her 10-year-old son draw the picture for her. See, mm-hmm. to me, that, again, is the sad part. They're so worried about failing and doing it wrong, they don't end up helping themselves. You know, they let go of something that could be very valuable. And I may add, you don't have to be an art therapist to say to your kids, hey, draw the home and family. Let me look at it. You know, we'll mm-hmm. put it on the refrigerator. Don't let them know you're analyzing it, because I always laugh when I think about that. We have five children, and they knew I was doing work with drawing. So if they were drawing a picture in their bedroom and I came by, they would slump over it so I couldn't see it. You know, they knew. But if they had a problem, then, oh, boy, hey, Dad, what should I draw? You know, and then we would help them decide something. But I think, again, let your children draw a picture. See, one that was, again, example, a child with cancer and her family were in the office. And she said, I don't get enough time for my family. Now, she has three siblings and her parents. And, you know, if I sat there talking to six people, what are you doing all day, you'd never solve the problem. I said, mm-hmm. honey, draw me a picture of the family. She drew everybody sitting on a sofa except herself. She was on a chair sitting separately, even though there was still an empty seat on the sofa. And her parents' arms were around the other kids and folded up so, you know, they couldn't touch her or hold her. And when the parents saw that, they said, thank you. I mean, they could see what she was feeling and experiencing. So they went home and made a big change in their routine and schedule and were always grateful to me for that picture. And because things will come out in a drawing, you know, because people don't know how to protect, you might say, the truth in the drawing. They're just drawing a picture. And if you are talking to them, they can figure out words so you won't know. In other words, if I see a family and nobody has a nose on it, I always say, you know, how can you breathe? You need, God breathed life into Adam through his nostrils. What's going on in the family, you know, that you feel that way? Or you don't have ears. You're not listening to each other. Or they may be deaf. I mean, that's why I talk to them. I'm not blaming somebody or saying something. Mm-hmm. I always think of this one little boy who came in the office, handed me a picture that was all black. I thought, oh my God, what's going on here? And, you know, I said to him, what's the problem? He said, I have two older brothers. That's the only crayon they give me. And, you know, I could laugh and know, okay, I don't have to worry about you at home. Mm-hmm. You know, but so when you can communicate with people, I let them discover what it means. And the other thing that's fascinating, that again, I learned because I'm drawing pictures of my family, myself, and when I would look at the picture, I'd say, wow, where did that come from? Because, you know, I know how to draw the right picture. So I want everybody to know, oh, we have a wonderful, wonderful family. And one example was one of the kids was driving us nuts. And when I drew the family, I noticed he wasn't holding his brother's hands on either side of him. And that fascinated me because I had set out to make sure everybody's holding hands, you know, touching each other, and boom, here's that empty space. So I tell people, if they want to interpret their own drawing, draw a picture tonight, but don't evaluate it till tomorrow. Because then when you pick it up tomorrow, you're looking at it as if somebody else drew it. Your unconscious is not blocking the truth anymore. So you'll look at it and you'll notice, oh boy, look at those broad shoulders. Oh, I don't have hands, or, you know, something else that may be going on. And then you can help yourself by learning from that and making the changes you need to make in your life.
You have a visualization exercise. There's so many wonderful stories in your book, The Art of Healing, and one that really I thought was so significant is that when you're helping patients to work with whatever issue they're dealing with, eliminating disease, you say avoid using language with negative connotations, such as eating or killing. Now,
right.
This is your perception. And you say for some patients, the aggressive approach doesn't work. So instead of visualizing Pac-Man, then eating the cancer, let's say, for like a piece of meat or something
right.
else, whatever it is, you ask them to remove their disease in a loving way, such as by visualizing God's light melting a tumor that appears as a block of ice. And what immediately popped into my mind was a scene from the recent movie Avatar, where there was this wonderful healing that went on underneath the tree of life that was portrayed, and the loving, wonderful feelings that were being portrayed. And I thought, wow, that's really quite a powerful way to look at things.
Yeah, I talk about being a love warrior. Because
a love warrior. I like that.
Mother Teresa saying, I will not attend an anti-war rally, but if you ever have a peace rally, call me.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me to get this. Well, again, I don't make up any of these stories. You're a conscientious objector. He was a Quaker. He went to see his oncologist. The oncologist said, Dave, I'm going to give you this treatment. It'll kill your cancer. Dave said, I don't kill anything, and he walked out of the office. Now, he didn't go home and die. He did his own thing and lived for 12 more years. But, you know, again, if the doctor had said to him, Dave, I'm going to help you get well, I don't think he would have had any problems with the treatment. So our language is significant, too, because it creates images in people. But I really learned that most people are not killers. So when you're, and also you empower your enemy. In other words, when you fight a war against disease or anything else, you're focusing on the enemy. You know, how can I defeat the enemy? What can I do? I'm trying to get people to understand that if you're going to give your body a live message, you need to love your life and love your body and heal your life. You see, and say, you know, I'm finding peace and I'm loving my life. And then your body says, oh, okay, let's try to keep you alive then. Solzhenitsyn in his book Cancer Ward put it beautifully, symbolically and in words. One of the men said, I found this book. It says there are cases of self-induced healing. That really jumped out at me because a doctor would say, oh, look, there are spontaneous remissions. But if it's spontaneous, you have nothing to do with it. But if it's self-induced, you have a lot to do with it. And the symbol he discussed was a rainbow-colored butterfly coming out of the book. The rainbow is your life in order, because every color literally has meaning. And the butterfly is a symbol of transformation. And I knew that Solzhenitsyn, because he had cancer, intuitively knew what I was talking about when he used that term, the rainbow-colored butterfly. So when people learn that, you know, they have a life-threatening illness and change their lives and start doing what they love to do. Yeah, I have letters that end with, I didn't die and I'm so busy I'm killing myself. But but what they're doing is what they love, and that's the difference. So it can be changing jobs, moving, getting a divorce. I mean, it's all kinds of things. It's up to the person to say, okay, I've been told I have a limited time here. How can I enjoy my time? And once you enjoy it, I keep thinking of a retiring landscaper I operated on who I told him I couldn't cure him with surgery and he needed more treatment. He said, it's springtime, going to go and make the world beautiful. So if I die, I'll leave a beautiful world. He mm-hmm. didn't die till 94.
Until
that's
94.
Like well over 20 years later, after his wife died, he turned off his switch.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you'd say, how did that happen? You know, I got a pathology report. It shows I couldn't cure him. But he went home. Instead of retiring, he spent the rest of his life making the world beautiful.
Absolutely.
And he became my teacher, I may add. Oh, I used to spend a lot of time with him enjoying life and the world and, you know, the plant world and seeing beautiful things.
Mm-hmm. You have a Dr. Caroline Thomas that
yeah.
you mention in the book. She's a professor and psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins Medical mm-hmm. School, and she had her medical students fill out a personality profile and draw a picture of themselves.
Right.
And this was the beginning of a long-term study,
mm-hmm.
and it followed them. Her study followed these students after they left medical school. Tell
right.
us what she found out.
Well, when I read that article, I can't remember what journal it was in, I got in touch with her, and I remember her saying to me, Bernie, I put cancer in as a category because I thought it would have nothing to do with emotions, you know, or personality. But she said it did. It had a low closeness to parent profile. And she said, I could tell if people were going to get cancer, where in their bodies they would get it because of how they drew the picture. She
Amazing.
Also said I could tell what diseases they were going to get from, you know, emotional disorders, like a heart disease, that by the way they drew themselves. I mean, just so people give them a simple symbol. You draw a picture of yourself and you don't have any arms or hands, or your hands are stuck in your pockets, you're more likely to have emotional trouble later in life. And my feeling is you're saying, I can't reach out, I can't get a grip on things, you see. If your arms are wide open, everybody can get something from you, a hug or take your energy. You're more likely to have a heart attack or heart disease. So she could see from the personality as well as the images, the drawings, and predict accurately what these students were going to get. And I may add, there are other psychologists who have done that. Bruno Klopfer, a psychologist, was given a couple of dozen personality profiles of cancer patients. And twice he said, I can't tell. Twice he was wrong. But 20 times he predicted correctly whether they would have a slow or fast-growing tumor. And the other was a study at Harvard, which had nothing to do with drawings, but had to do with how your parents treated you. They were asked, did your parents love you? If they said yes, 25% had suffered an illness in the next, say, 35 years, you know, by middle age.
Mm-hmm.
If they said, no, my parents didn't love me, 98% had suffered a major illness. So,
interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, as well as Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides. So, and, you know, and illnesses of all sorts. So you can see that you can't separate yourself from your life. And yet, many doctors used to yell at me. We've had a lot of studies now in the last 30 years, so I don't get criticized. But they would say to me, you're blaming your patients, you're blaming your patients. And I said, I'm not blaming people because I want to know about their life and their personality. I want to know what may be making them vulnerable to an illness so I can help them change who they are. And I always say, you can act as if, you rehearse in practice. I say to people, you're a blank canvas, you're creating a work of art. You know, you don't throw it out or say it's horrible. You can retouch it, repaint it, the same with yourself. So you rehearse and practice and you find coaches. I like the term life coach, like Love Warrior. You know, you look for life coaches who will be critical of you, but in a constructive way, like the coach of a football team would be. You know, you're criticizing your players, but it's to make them better players.
Now, I want to go back to the tools that you that we were chatting about, and one is the noisemaker.
Yeah, the
And the other is
the
water gun, and you have some wonderful stories in here. I loved it with the kid that didn't want to be bothered. You'd give your patients a water gun and say, if you don't want to be bothered, shoot the nurse.
Yeah. I mean, one boy had over his bed intern shot on sight. But you see, I mean, in that case, this teenager was dying in the hospital. I mean, he was there. He accepted the fact that he was dying. And his girlfriend would visit. His parents would visit. But he would shut the door to have private time with him. And what would happen? You know, the nurse would come in. Somebody would come in to mop the floor. I mean, they could have waited. But if they came in when he had shut the door, he would drench them with his water gun. And, you know, they never took it away because, again, it was a way of expressing anger without hurting anybody. And ultimately, they really learned he was teaching them something because when he died, that gun became a gift to other kids. You know, if anybody bothers you, anybody hurts you, squirt them. And it empowered the kids. The noisemaker isn't really funny in the sense that I know people would be dead today if they didn't have a roommate. Because they push the call button, nobody shows up. And it's a common joke, you know. If you push the call button, you're guaranteed an hour of uninterrupted silence. I mean, you know, that may be funny if you're healthy, but it isn't if you really need help. So
right.
I always say, take a noisemaker with you. And if something happens and you need help, make a lot of noise so they come in. And the magic marker, again, is not a joke. That there are many people who have the wrong surgery. You know, on the wrong eye, the wrong breast, the wrong leg. And so you write on one side, cut here, and on the other side, not this one, stupid. I mean, I know doctors who have taken out a child's tonsils when the kid was there for eye surgery.
Oh, my God.
Like, don't you know your patient? So if I were a parent, I'd write on my child's forehead, here to have tonsils removed. Or here for surgery on the right eye, you know, to make sure that this is not some tragic mistake because, again, they're not treating a person, they're treating a disease. So they don't know the person. Yeah.
I think that's important.
The word patient means a submissive sufferer. I always say, don't be a good patient. You know, become a responsible participant. Make sure people know you, not by your room number or your disease, but by some name they make up for you, the pest, the character, grandma, you know. I mean, you want them to know you so they don't make a mistake when they come in your room.
Absolutely true. Well, Dr. Bernie Siegel, I know we're just about out of time here. I want people to know about your book, The Art of Healing. It definitely is a must-read. Not only do you give the toolkit information, but I love the stories about the people that you have had the opportunity to get to know, and that some of them passed on. Each of them gave you a very significant gift.
Right.
And you are sharing these gifts with us through your book, The Art of Healing. And for those of you listening, you can go to BernieSiegelMD.com. That's BernieSiegelMD.com. Find out about his other publications. But it's always a joy, Bernie, to have you on the air because we know you come not just from heart, but you also come from the love of your profession and wanting to make people's lives healthier, richer on so many levels. Thank you for being my guest today.
You said we're running out of time, and that's what I try to remind people. We're all going to run out of time, so enjoy your time.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, and I look
forward to
your next publication. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in to, if you would like to chat with me today, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you in Western Washington, I want to remind you that I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Emerald Spiral Expo in Kent, Washington, at the Kent Commons Center. And if you're on my email list, you're going to be getting an email from me regarding the location, the time, and all other kinds of information. So I'll be there. I'll also be speaking at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I invite you to come and join me. This is a wonderful event. 9 to 5 are the hours. It's for the family. So much fun. Lots of fascinating people to talk with. And to me, it's sort of a cozy environment. It's just absolutely delightful. I'll be doing mini sessions. I'll also have books and some other items there with me at the event. So why don't you come by and say hello? I would love to see you. Again, if you'd like to chat with me today, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want to share something with you out of Bernie Siegel's book, because this made me laugh like crazy, and I thought you would enjoy it, too. In his book, he's got so much good information, but this was a suggestion that he made, because this is what he did. He said, name your dog Sex and your cat's Hope and Miracle, as I have. See what happens when you run around the yard chasing Sex and shout to your wife that you don't have Miracle and can't get Sex, but at least you've got Hope. You'll embarrass your kids with your childlike humor, but they will appreciate it later in life. Wonderful sense of humor, wonderful man, and I'm so delighted he was with us today. I'm telling you, I have had, just in the past 2 days, experienced so many people's stories, both through the counseling that I do and through just listening in conversation to people. I had a woman who was visiting with us yesterday, and this is a woman that just recently had an accident, and she's got a cast on her foot, and she has to have one of those little portable units you push around, you put your leg up on it so you can go from one spot to another. And I heard her story about a fire, and she absolutely lost everything in a fire. And we were talking about beautiful items. She likes antiques like me and my husband do, and she said, well, you know, I lost everything. Absolutely everything. And she said, since then, I will acquire certain things, but it's not been too important to me to go and acquire the type of things like I did before. And I thought, wow, here's this individual with a fire. I learned of someone else who was in a critical care situation. Economic problems with someone else. Someone else had a car that almost went up in flames. There's all of these things that happen to us, but it's what we do with them that make a difference. Now, if you're like me, when these things start occurring, sometimes you'll stand there and you'll go, okay, if this is for the greater good, what am I supposed to be getting out of this? And then on the other side of your brain, it's going, I really don't like this. I do not want this to happen. This isn't what I planned with my life. Isn't it interesting how we go to war with ourselves? And all of a sudden, we have to take a positioning, if we're wise, about what we're going to do. And I wanted to share a story with you about Thomas Edison. When I came across this story, after hearing about all of these different things affecting so many people just in the past 2 days, and I said, oh, my goodness, this is just a wonderful example of how to take something and turn it into something positive. Now, this occurred on December the 9th, 1914. Edison's facility was totally destroyed. All of his records were gone. All of his instruments were gone. His lab, everything. Everything was gone. At that time, in 1914, the loss exceeded $2 million. Well, my goodness, it would be 10 or 20 times more of that today. And when you stand in front of a fire and you are watching it literally dissolve everything in front of you, you really have no control over it. The fire department can be there with the fire hoses. I know my husband went through that with a business. A fire started in his business because of a defective space heater. It was turned off. It activated. Somehow it activated. And he almost lost the whole business. Well, with Thomas Edison, he was insured for only $238. Big difference between $2 million in loss and being insured for $238. Why was it such a small amount? Well, the buildings were made of concrete, which at the time they thought concrete was fireproof. In addition to that, Edison was 67 years old. He wasn't a young man. He was a man of mature years. How do you think you'd feel if everything you had totally disappeared, and you were almost 70 years old? Well, the fire raged at Edison's facility all night. By morning, they finally had gotten it under control. Edison had been outside watching all of the activity. He looks at the charred remains that are still smoking in front of him. He looks at the fact that everything that was in there was gone, couldn't reproduce it, per se. And then he said something to someone around him. He said, there's a great value in disaster. All our mistakes are burned up. Thank God we can start anew. Whoa. Do you think you would have responded that way? That's quite a shift in thinking, isn't it? 67 years old, everything's gone, all of his notes, all of his labor, and he says there's great value in disaster. All of our mistakes are burned up. Now we can start over. 3 weeks after that horrific fire, Edison Industries produced the first phonograph. Amazing. 3 weeks. Now, what would this mean? When we look at someone else's experience, what kind of value do you think we can extract from this? Potentially, maybe, a future success. When you have vision, when you are looking at something with the attitude like he had, you're going to say, all right, we're starting right where we are. We start right here, right now, right where we are, and we're going to move forward. This is a new beginning. And I want to share something else with you that I learned about relative to Edison. And this was just last night. And I was watching the program History's Mysteries. Have you ever watched it? I love shows like that because there's so much diversified information. And what occurred is Edison had invented an ink pen to write with, an electric pen of some kind. Well, it's on display in a particular museum at this time. I don't remember if it's in Ohio, where it is exactly, but it's still on display. Well, this was a failure, and this electric pen, was put on display after it was recognized as not being practical to use in a storefront window. Now, this is in the early 1900s. Oh, probably maybe in the teens, early 20s, 1920 maybe, I think it came out. Anyway, it just didn't work. It wasn't practical. The market wasn't going to accept it. But it was on display, and there was a young man. He was an immigrant. He walked past it, and he looked at it, and he kept looking at it, and kept looking at it, and kept looking at it. And he went in, and he said, "May I examine it?" So he did, and he was able to check it out. That young man went on to design a tattooing instrument that today is still utilized, maybe in a more sophisticated form. But where Edison's group failed in making it effective, it was transformed into a tattooing industry. This young man ended up becoming a millionaire. And he trained people to do the work he did, where, my goodness, so many of the tattoo artists are just, they are artists, they're just amazing. So what was once for sailors and people that often like to do that type of thing, when this young man came out with it, the general public had access to it. Access to his talent of working with painting pictures on the skin. Two stories about Edison. Fascinating stuff. So one thing might be considered a failure. Someone else says, well, I think I could make something out of it. It's the way we think. It's the inventiveness. It's how can we take what we've got and put it into something that is going to be utilized in a different way, or maybe we start all over, realizing there's always, always some kind of an opportunity. And, you know, one of the biggest lessons I've had to learn is to open my mouth and ask people, what do you think? I've got this challenge in front of me. How can this be resolved? What would be your idea? Goodness, Google is using that daily. They have brainstorming sessions every single day. Why? Because it is through the power of the mind, imagination, creativity, that we can come up with some new things. We just need to know. We need to be open and not be afraid to look dumb. Some of the most brilliant inventions have come about because someone had a spouse somewhere. Maybe their dog ran away with a tool, and they figure something out because of the way the dog is acting. The mind is limitless. It is absolutely incredible. The things that have been done by people to make this planet a better place, oh, I know there's been some stuff that's been not so good. But you know what? We always have the opportunity. Somewhere, somehow, there is the opportunity to make a difference. And before we go on break, I want you to just think about that. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to start over right where you are right now. Don't be afraid to enlist into some classes or into different environments. Be open and receptive. You never know. You never know what is going to come your way, just like the young man that walked by a storefront that had a glass window, sees an instrument called an electric pen that was a failure by Thomas Edison and his group. It wasn't to the young man, though, that looked at it. He saw opportunity in that failure. It's all in how we perceive things, isn't it? This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Hey, give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. We're going to come back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. A little bit of this, a little bit of that I'm going to be sharing with you, but if you would like to chat with me, I would be delighted to do that. 888-627-6008. Hey, we've got some wonderful guests that are going to be coming up next week. One More Mountain, Janet Buckwalter, is going to be my guest. She has combined some stories of people that have done incredible accomplishments. And then we're going to be talking with Soul Dancer and a man who has a mission. Soul has it. He has a mission where he wants to make sure that people, as they get older, they're going to be able to have care and well-being. So we'll be talking with him on Tuesday. And then we're going to be talking with two people on Wednesday of next week. Do you want to know how to negotiate? Well, Tally Raffley is a person who has put together a real good book on how to negotiate effectively. Then we're going to be talking with Suma Zanharman about the Emerald Spiral Expo. And then we will be discussing on Thursday the Condor Song. Oh, my goodness. Was this ever a dynamic publication? When I got it, it's fiction, but, oh, it's got a lot of facts and information in it about this phenomenal bird. But this is a murder mystery that can really be gripping. And then, Rosalind Burney, When the Horses Whisper. Oh, this book is wonderful. I love horses. I don't know about you. I'm sure you've heard about the wonderful movie, The Horse Whisperer, which, by the way, if you want to know about the man that assisted Robert Redford to play the role in The Horse Whisperer, it's go to your public library and get a movie called Buck, B-U-C-K. It's the real story about the real horse whisperer. And Robert Redford, I saw an interview with him and with Buck, and it is powerful. So if you can, check it out at your local library. It is a wonderful movie to watch. Never underestimate the power of the mind. Age doesn't have too much to do with what thinking can produce. Now, there is a young woman, and I really was amazed. She is 18 years old. She is a high school student, and she presented, she's an inventor. She presented a concept, a device, at the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair, and this is what it was. She showed how cell phones could charge in less than 30 seconds. Now, do you have a cell phone like I do where you have to plug it in and it takes a few hours for it to charge? This young lady developed something. It will change the industry. If you've ever run out of cell phone power, you know what it's like to be frustrated to have to charge it because it takes so long. She became one, this young lady, Isha Kerr, became one of three winning students in this competition put on by Intel. 1,600 young people participated from around the world. And she said when she was interviewed by CBS, I developed a new supercapacitor, which is basically an energy storage device that can hold a lot of energy in a small amount of volume. Wow. My thought when I read that, I said, why can't they do that with cars? Why can't we do that with houses? Why can't we do, and again, it could go on and on. Now, what is a supercapacitor? It isn't a battery. That's right, it's not a battery. In fact, it would fit, it's so tiny, it would fit inside your phone's battery, and according to Ms. Kerr, it would last through 10,000 charges in addition to juicing up in 30 seconds. 18 years old, she comes up with this idea. It's approximately 10 times the number of charges our current cell phone batteries get now. Other chargeables, car batteries? Well, her concepts, her thinking on this could revolutionize how we look at energy. Can you imagine solar energy being stored with a super capacitor? Our electrical bills could go down phenomenally. Using solar energy would pay for itself a lot more quickly. She was awarded a $50,000 certificate, and she's going to be attending Harvard University. You know that it's 8 hours. That's all you've got with the maximum battery life for an iPhone 5 using a 3-gig internet connection. That's all you've got. What a phenomenal invention this young lady is bringing to the world. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Because and that number is 888-627-6008. I wanted to share some whimsical stuff with you. Every once in a while, we'll hear about dumb criminals. And this is something that I get such a kick out of, because we need to have a sense of humor, I think, about life. Well, there was someone that was ID'd for their crimes by Instagram. There was a man, Nathaniel Troy May, who is 44 years of age, and Tawana Tanise Thomason, 40. Now, these two people were wanted for identity theft and were caught thanks to some boneheaded, these are the exact words used, some boneheaded social networking. Now, they were out having a real expensive steak dinner. They snapped an Instagram picture and tagged the location. The picture was used in court to help identify the two individuals I mentioned, and they will be facing up to 12 years behind bars. Yes. Internet. Cell phone. They were caught. And also, this happened to a shop clerk in New York City. They were robbed at gunpoint. Her iPhone was stolen, and this happened in early time of 2011. Well, a nearby officer knew how to take care of it because he could use his own phone. So this is what he did. He said, using the Find My iPhone app, he entered the victim's Apple ID, located the missing mobile in seconds. Now, he was able to catch the thief. Guess what the thief had done? He had stashed the device in his sock. He was caught. Sock-handed, I guess you'd say. Okay, this is Donna Sebo. I know you've got a fabulous weekend coming up. It's fall. It's absolutely beautiful out there. The temps are getting a little cooler, but won't you take time to enjoy yourself? Live life with a zest. This is your time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless you. Have an absolutely magnificent weekend, and we'll be here bright and sassy on Monday, sharing more good things with you on The Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.